This is Edward October, host of October Pod on YouTube. Hear that jingle jingle? It could be Kris Kringle, or a home invader looking for an open window, a jilted lover looking for revenge, or a disgruntled co-worker hoping to spike your eggnog with arsenic. The girls of our true crime podcast are always on Santa's nice list, but the crimes they discuss are very naughty indeed. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Fantabuloso. Today's number 11. We only have today and tomorrow, and then we're done. Yep.
Everything's wrapping up nicely.
Literally. You guys are literally wrapping up nicely.
Literally. Right? I hope everybody's well and ready to celebrate Christmas and...
Or
probably tomorrow when number 12 comes out, you'll maybe heading to Christmas Eve festivities. And I apologize to all our friends of any other faiths. Like,
well, Hanukkah's going on right now, but when we get there, this will not be during Hanukkah time. So
exactly. Yeah. And so I hope all of our Hanukkah friends enjoyed their latkes, which, God, I love a latke.
Well, since you sent me that video of that girl doing the latkes, I want to try that. You know I love me some potatoes and ketchup.
What we're talking about, there's a cute girl. Her name is Tess Corman, I believe, and she works for Delish. And I actually stumbled across her when I had my oral surgery the first time and I couldn't eat because she does like a little series of going to amusement parks and just eating all the foods. And I was so hungry and all I could do was watch her eat. But anyway, she's cute. She's fun. And now that the whole COVID thing has happened, she is doing she's cooking Jewish foods for the first time with the help of her mother, sometimes via Zoom.
It's cute.
And she's made cute. She's young. Yeah, she's funny. And so check her out. She's on the YouTube under Delish. I think her Twitter is Tess Corman, TessKorman. Anyway, I just found her. She's charming. She's cute. She's sarcastic. She's funny. I like her.
Yes. So check it out.
And I like food, so
double thing.
It helps me.
Yep, I got you.
It is. All right, so are we ready to do
today? I am ready as I will be.
Number 11.
So here we go. Now, Jen, at this point in the world, I am sure I speak for all humans, the human race. And yeah, it's pretty bold of me, but I'm going to do it. When I say we all owe a giant thank you to all the healthcare workers out there in the whole world.
Yes, huge. They've been phenomenal through this whole thing, and how they have done it is beyond me. Seriously, they're more than I will ever be my entire life.
I mean, I think we can all say that about you.
Yeah, I wouldn't even fight you on that, but yeah, seriously, they've...
Okay.
Just
so
heroes.
They are angels walking on this earth. And in the last months, those angels have been pulling triple duty, saving the lives of our loved ones and caring for them when they're sick. And, you know, I mean, honestly, they hold life and death in their hands each day. And they fight so hard to save those lives. And that is what they do. That's what they should do. Or, as in today's case, that is what most of them do, but not all of them.
There's always a bad apple
somewhere.
Boy,
is this one bad. Woo-wee, doggers. It's bad. So today we are going to Kerrville, Texas. It is 1992, and a new doctor by the name of Dr. Kathleen Holland is just in town. She just got to town, and she has decided to start her own pediatric clinic. Now, the town of Kerrville was excited to have a new practice in town, as well as having a female doctor for the babies, of course. You know, that's kind of a mom thing, I guess. But there was only one other pediatric clinic in town, so this was a big deal for Kerrville. The doctor staffed up the clinic with the best people she could find. One of these people was a licensed vocational nurse by the name of Janine Jones. Now, Janine had recently resigned from nearby Bexar County Medical Center Hospital. For the first couple of weeks, all was going pretty well, and then things changed. Now, as you know, this is a pediatric clinic, so most of these young people were fairly healthy coming in for routine exams and, you know, vaccinations, things like that. This wasn't, you know, this isn't an ER or a pediatric hospital. It's kind of like your little regular doctor, right? Suddenly, there seemed to be an increase in these children experiencing various problems, such as difficulty breathing. And it turns out they would be fine, doing well. But then after Nurse Jones came and tended to them, something changed. Now, Janine seemed to be great at her job, and she always knew what to do in these stressful moments of these, you know, near emergencies. That changed on Friday, September 17th, 1982, when a 14-month-old baby girl named Chelsea came in for a routine vaccination. Nurse Jones was on duty and was the one who gave the baby her shot when suddenly the baby began to have a seizure. The baby was rushed from the clinic to the Sid Peterson Hospital. The ER doctors worked feverishly to get Chelsea to breathe, and they were successful. Just a month later, little Chelsea would visit the clinic once more to receive a routine vaccine from Nurse Jones, but this time she would not survive. This lady's evil, evil, evil.
Just put a bullet to her head now. That's fine. I'll buy the bullet.
Janine was born on July 13th, 1950, and was given up for adoption by her birth mother. A couple by the name of Dick and Gladys Jones adopted baby Janine, who would join the couple's other three adopted children. The couple did quite well, as Dick was an entrepreneur and professional gambler. Kind of cracked me up from 1950. But after a while, the nightclub in which he owned and operated went out of business. Money became tight after that. Janine would say, later on, that she never felt like she fit in with the family, and she was not treated the same as her other adopted siblings. Now, she learned a way to get some attention from her parents, and that was to fake being sick. During her school years, she struggled to make and keep friends. She was kind of short in stature, and she was a little chubby, but her classmates would say, that didn't matter. What mattered was that she was bossy, and she would actually lie and manipulate people to get what she wanted. So, you know.
Yeah. People don't like that.
Tends to not go over too well. When Janine was 16, a tragedy killed her 14-year-old brother, with whom she was close. Now, the boy had made a pipe bomb, and the pipe bomb exploded on him, actually in his face, killing him. Now, just a little over a year after Travis died, that's her brother, Janine's father would die from cancer at age 56. Lost and looking for answers, Janine thought the cure was to get married. Let's get married and get out of the house.
That all solves all your teenage problems.
Sure does. So her mother was totally against this idea, completely. But, you know, Gladys was kind of suffering her own demons at the time and was looking for guidance at the bottom of a bottle. She had a little drinking problem. Finally, when Janine graduated, she married a high school dropout, James Jimmy Harvey Delaney Jr. After 7 months of marriage, he enlisted in the Navy, and Janine got herself a boyfriend, or 20, and cheated on him. And that would be kind of a thing she did throughout her life. She wasn't quiet about it, and later would often brag to her co-workers about all her sexual conquest, making them feel uneasy around her. And one of the things that I watched on Janine Jones, because I kind of forgot about her, this was like back when we were in high school, is the investigator was like, and she was not a pretty woman. It just made me laugh because I was like, okay.
I hate when they bring
You usually never hear that about a man, right? A man, he was not a handsome fella. I mean, they just, whatever.
I was doing research on one and it said she was rotund. She doesn't matter to the story. So
She liked to have a lot of sex, and there was some.
That's not the point.
People had said that she was fighting against her inner demons because they believed she was a lesbian, so she was out there having. Now, that's why I did not put that in the story. This is just me telling you that because, again, that doesn't really have.
That's what your research found. That's rumor, hearsay.
So anyway, back to the story. While Jimmy, her husband, was gone, Janine enrolled in beauty school, and when he returned, they welcomed a child. But after 4 years of marriage, when Jimmy was recovering from a boating accident, Janine served him with divorce papers. Okay. Guess he couldn't run away because he's, you know, recuperating from that boating accident. Tragedy once again hit as Janine's older brother died of cancer. Her fear of getting cancer overcame her at this time. And because she was so freaked out by working with the chemicals that go with, you know, working in a beauty shop, coloring their hair, perming and all that, she wanted out of there. She was also pregnant at this time. So she wanted a new career. She wanted something that would, you know, make her happy and give her something to be passionate about, but also be a little bit safer. So she thought she would give nursing a shot. So it was at this point that Janine gave her children to her mother to raise. So she had two kids and gave them to her mother to raise. She went on to nursing school. Janine had trained for a year to become a vocational nurse, an LVN, or licensed vocational nurse. And while she seemed to be good at it and enjoy it, there was another aspect that made her love her new career. Doctors, right? Or rather, being close to them, as she seemed to idolize them, and she made a practice of trying to be around them as often as she could. Her first job was at San Antonio Methodist Hospital, and well, she only lasted there about 8 months before getting fired. The reason for her termination was twofold. One was that Janine was hard to get along with. She was bossy, you know, kind of like in her childhood years. She was bossy. She was a know-it-all. And I mean, she's not a registered nurse, but yet she would go and tell, you know, people above her how to do their job and that they were doing it wrong. And typically that doesn't go over too well, right? She'd often make rude comments to people, her bosses, things like that. But one patient in particular was like, I don't think so. And I guess she was kind of mean to him one day and he complained about her. And yeah, so all in all that came in and they decided that, yeah, you got to go, right? You're trying to call these shots and be rude to patients, and you're not at that level to do that, right? You're not a doctor. Her second job in healthcare didn't last much longer, and it seemed people just didn't like her and her attitude. It was her employment within the ICU pediatric unit of Bexar County Medical Center Hospital that would begin her reign of deaths, starting in May 1981 until December of that same year. Now, this is a small amount of time, so keep that in mind as we go through the story. A large amount of babies were suffering from cardiac arrest and or unexplained bleeding when they were seen as normal, healthy babies, and people didn't know what was going on. One of the first, or possibly the first, victim was a baby that came to the hospital with a fatal intestinal condition when she died. Janine flipped out, screaming, yelling. And everybody deals with death differently. I get it. And especially if this one did have a fatal condition, but what remains to be seen is maybe Janine helped push that along a little faster. I don't know. But what I do know is that her coworker said that she was acting out of control. Like she was throwing herself down on the ground. She was screaming. She was yelling. She even brought in a chair in to where the body was and just stared at him and cried. It's just bizarre attention seeking behavior a little bit. And I say that because we move along here and we'll see that kind of has a pattern. By 1981, Jones asked to be in charge of the sickest patients. She seemed to thrive on the chaos and would always ask to take the bodies to the morgue once they passed. These are all kids or babies, right? To her coworkers, it was becoming crystal clear that something was going on, but only when Janine was on duty. For example, a baby boy had a seizure each day that Janine was working, but only during her shift. When she was not working or was working later, he was fine. So he was having seizures with her there to help, you know, help care for him, help save him, if you will.
Yeah, right. Save, right.
More questions began to arise when a six-month-old baby boy named Jose went to cardiac arrest while under the care of Janine. He was revived, but went into cardiac arrest the following day and ended up dying. An autopsy revealed the baby had a large amount of heparin, which is an anticoagulant, in his system. There was no reason whatsoever why little baby Jose should have this drug in his system, and no doctor had ordered it for him.
How do you hurt little kids? I know why they're the victims, but I don't know how. Especially babies. I mean, little innocent.
And yet another
teeny tiny.
And yet another sad and bizarre death. A young child came to the hospital and was recovering from open heart surgery. Surgery went well. The baby was doing great. At first, he was doing well, and then he took a turn for the worst, under Janine's care. When he died, Janine took a syringe. I mean, this is just bizarre. Took a syringe that had saline solution in it, and she made a cross across the baby, pouring out the liquid over his little body, mm-hmm. and then did the same thing to herself. And I was like, you know, it seems like she thinks she's a priest, like she's performing last rites. What are you doing? Right? That is not normal.
And nobody stopped her.
He said that. After a doctor stepped up and told hospital administrators that something was not right with Janine, and he thought Janine was killing babies. He said it. He said it right there. He's like, all these babies are dying, and the only common denominator is Janine Jones. Well, the head nurse stuck up for Janine, right? And this is where we get to the resigning from a hospital. The head nurse stuck up for her, mm-hmm. and the hospital decided to look the other way because it's easier, right? So instead of taking the doctor's warning, they took the head nurse's word, I guess, if you will. So everything's going to go back to normal, right? Everything's going to be good, right? Wrong.
Mm-hmm.
With such a high and, well, mysterious death count, people were starting to question just what the heck was going on at the hospital. Eventually, a medical panel was put together with experts to look into these bizarre deaths. And these experts would come from not just the United States. They brought in some people from Canada, too. I mean, this was a big deal, right? Interviews were conducted with staff members at the hospital. And it was here that one of Janine's coworkers, this is a second coworker, mind you, accused her to be the cause of these infant deaths. Even with this firm assertion, or accusation, I guess, the panel was still not able to come up with a definitive, I don't know how to say that. Like, the panel was still not able to come up with definitive proof that Janine Jones was responsible for these children's deaths. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm pissed at everybody mm-hmm. already.
Well,
so.
And this brings a whole nother story, and we'll talk about it because I was talking about this with somebody earlier. So the hospital administrators get together and they're like, okay, listen, the panel didn't do us any justice here. We got to figure out something else. So they get together. This is really going to make you mad. So they get together and they decide, hey, this is how we can do this. Let's get rid of all the LPNs, right? No more LPNs. Only RNs, only registered nurses. Because that would be the easy way to avoid the conversation with Janine Jones, right?
Yeah, so sure. That helps.
Well, you know what it does.
Too,
just moves the trash. Moves the mm-hmm. trash on down the line.
Mm-hmm.
So the hospital administrators asked Jones to resign from the hospital, and she complied. Of course she's going to comply. They also asked the accusing nurse that had mentioned earlier, you know, that Janine was doing that. Well, why don't you go ahead and resign too? Because, you know, it's just better to have you both out of here. After they left, miraculously, Jen, the death rates of the infants dropped.
Well, I'm shocked.
Right?
It's very shocking. Who knew?
So this brings us up to where we started the story. Janine Jones took a position at the pediatric clinic in Kerrville, Texas, near San Antonio, under the leadership of Dr. Kathleen Howard. And we're hopping to this point. So the clinic had only been opened weeks when more than six children. Now, this is a clinic, too. This is like a clinic. You know, it's not a hospital, whatever. It's a checkup facility, basically. They'd only been opened weeks when more than six children needed to be resuscitated in the clinic. Now, I'm not a doctor, but I would say that is way above normal. Am I right?
Right. I would hope so.
Mm-hmm. So that very day that we started the episode with baby Chelsea and Chelsea dying, she'd been into the clinic within weeks that it opened, and she had a seizure, and she was rushed to the nearby hospital, and they worked so hard on her to resuscitate her and get her back to normal and stabilize her. And it happened. It was great. She's fine. So about a month later, she came in to get her MMR vaccine, or measles, mumps, and rubella vaccination, if you remember that. So very standard mm-hmm. vaccine, you know, nothing out of the ordinary. Nurse Jones administered the shot to her, and within seconds, the baby started seizing. Once again, the baby was rushed to the nearby hospital, where, again, the doctors worked to stabilize her. Now, because this was the second time that happened to Chelsea and there was no outside things that would indicate she had any issues, they decided that once she was stable, they wanted to send her to a specialist in San Antonio. They wanted to get her evaluated and see what was going on, right? So while she's being transported in the ambulance, Chelsea suffered cardiac arrest, and this time she could not be revived. An autopsy was performed, and it was determined that she did die from cardiac arrest, and they attributed this to SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. Now, the emergencies continued in the Kerrville clinic over the next several weeks. A 5-month-old girl began choking and was unable to breathe when she was at the clinic. She had to be rushed to the hospital. Just days later, a baby had a seizure in the clinic and again was transported to the nearby hospital. In the 1 month since the clinic opened, Dr. Holland's clinic had 7 incidents that required emergency response. Ugh. Now, that's a lot.
Somebody had to have noticed.
In 4 weeks?
Right.
I mean, come on. Now, here's where I mentioned that Kerrville has only about 20,000 people living there, okay? 20,000 people and 7 infants are having to be, you know, rushed to the hospital when they go in for just a checkup, okay? It's also known basically as a retirement city. A lot of older folks retire there. There are families and stuff, but the numbers do not work it out to have 7 infants in 1 month.
No, not exactly. With that small of a population.
Obviously, Jen, people began to question just what was going on at Dr. Holland's clinic. An investigator stepped in.
Thank you.
Hospital administrators at Sid Peterson Hospital decided they needed to talk to Dr. Holland. They requested a formal meeting with her. They wanted to hold a meeting with her in the presence of all these people that would, I guess it's like an inquisition, basically. Like, you know, it's an inquiry to figure out what's going on. During the meeting, Dr. Holland would field questions pertaining to all of the 7 incidents that took place while the children were under her care. One of the questioning doctors asked her if she had access or had ever used the muscle relaxant with children, mind you, succinylcholine. And I don't know if I said that right, but we're going to go with it, okay?
It sounds
I did it. That's okay. Or succinylcholine.
Sorry.
Is a skeletal muscle relaxant for IV administration used alongside, usually, general anesthesia. The drug is also used, it is one of the 3 drugs used in the drug cocktail to perform lethal injections for those sentenced to death. Right? So it's used to calm the body down before the bad stuff happens. So Dr. Holland, and you know, she's pretty defensive, and I don't blame her, because she, I mean, now... But
Dr.
Yes,
Holland,
because you know they're accusing her
that
she or somebody that works with her is doing this. So of course she's upset because this is her livelihood. You know, she's a doctor, went to med school all those years, whatever. So Dr. Holland said that yes, she did have 1 vial of this drug in the office, but it had never been used and it remained unopened. Now, after her meeting with the hospital administrators, Dr. Holland goes back to the office and she starts questioning the people that was working with her for her. What, you know, just asking them questions to try to get some answers. Everybody was pretty normal, right? Except the meeting with Nurse Jones. Janine Jones was fidgety and she seemed bothered by something. But as the discussion was winding down, and you know, Dr. Holland didn't bring this up, mind you, Janine said, out of nowhere, "Oh, I found that missing vial of succinylcholine." Say what?
What?
Dr. Holland did not know there was a vial missing, much less needed to be located, right? So Janine Jones told Dr. Holland that they were missing a vial of it, so she ordered another, but in the meantime, found the missing one, so now they have 2 vials of the drug, and it's in the refrigerator. Not suspicious at all, right? I mean, that just happens to be the exact drug that the doctors at the during the meeting asked her about.
She's kind of a bitch.
After the meeting, Dr. Holland was like, this can't be. I mean, I'm sure all kinds of things were going through her head, right? So Dr. Holland went into the area with the refrigerator that contained the medicines, and she opened the refrigerator door, and there it is. There's 2 vials of the drug right there. So she's like, okay, I guess they were wrong. I guess, you know, they had to be wrong, even though Nurse Jones mentioned that to her out of the blue. Okay. So she decided to pick up the bottles because she was going to give them to investigators and just say, hey, you asked me about this. If this means anything, whatever, right? But upon closer inspection, she was looking at the top and then bam, she saw it. Two tiny needle holes in one of the vials. The doctor called authorities and turned over the vials to them, who sent them to a lab to be tested. One of the vials was, in fact, brand new and full with the drug intact. The other was diluted with saline water, so much so it was about 80% water, 20% drug. Yeah.
Kind of like what we used to do in high school with the vodka.
Mm-hmm.
Just drink a little bit and put... Mm-hmm.
So at this point, the investigators, you know, she did turn it in, but they're wondering if Dr. Holland and her nurse, Janine Jones, could have been responsible for the death of Chelsea. The problem with suspecting, Jen, we know, and proving would be hard because succinylcholine is made up of, and I'm going to say this wrong, I'm sorry, succinic acid and choline, which are actually both found in the human body. So after this drug is administered, it breaks down very quickly and it's not traceable because it is made up of things that are already in the human body. So it is virtually, you can't, it would be the perfect drug to do bad things with. You know what I'm saying? And she knows that because she's a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if I mentioned this, Jenna. I don't think I did, but you know, Dr. Holland was so worried about Chelsea that afternoon. She wanted to follow the ambulance that was taking Chelsea to the specialist in San Antonio. So she wanted to follow the ambulance. She wanted to make sure everything was okay. And as she was following the ambulance, it pulled over. Well, she got scared. And, you know, the back doors fling open and they call her in. They want her to come in there and check on Chelsea. Something's going on, right? She wasn't too worried that anything would happen to baby Chelsea on the way over in the ambulance because, you know what? She'd asked her nurse, Nurse Janine Jones, to be in the ambulance with Chelsea on the way to the specialist. Did you follow all that? Nurse Jones was in the ambulance with baby Chelsea when she went into cardiac arrest. She did it.
Oh.
She put the drug in her
again. That.
Right? And Dr. Holland put the nurse in there thinking that I want to make sure she's safe till we get her to the specialist, not knowing that you're sending
wrong
sending
one
baby to death.
Well, I bet you they narrowed it down what was going on then, correct?
All eyes began
to
focus in on Janine Jones, but they needed proof that Chelsea was killed with this drug. Prosecutors found what, or shall I say, who they needed. Dr. Frederick Readers is a forensic scientist who studied these similar drugs in this family, the hard-to-trace family and things like that. So tissue samples and the autopsy report were sent to the doctor, who then sent them to Sweden to a place called the Karolinska Institute. There, scientists were using a new groundbreaking and relatively new method called gas chromatography. Yes, that's right. I could have said that wrong. I don't know. But this process, and it's pretty cool, actually, it heats up the molecules in the tissue and then it separates them. And this part, I don't know. And if anybody's smart out there, let me know. But I just did what, you know, this gas thing was. So it separates separates molecules within the tissue. And then it measures the speed at which the separation takes place. And by doing that, they're able to break it down to so, I guess, finite amounts that they could actually track things that normally would not be trackable. Right? Does that make sense? So using this procedure, they were able to have these samples, get them separated, and bam, teeny tiny trace amounts of succinylcholine were discovered in Chelsea's tissues. I mean, that's pretty remarkable because your body breaks that down so fast and then you can't differentiate it between really your own body chemistry, I guess. Woo-wee. So here's the proof, right? So Jen, at this point, the news media is going crazy debating how many babies and children died under the care of Janine Jones, with reports ranging from 11 to over 60.
Jesus.
A grand jury was convened and looked into 47 suspicious deaths. 47! During her four-year working period while she was at Bexler Hospital.
That is unreal.
A second jury gathered and they wanted to take a look at the Kerrville Clinic. And after doing so, they decided to bring forth an indictment in the death of baby Chelsea.
So only one indictment?
So far, but just wait.
Okay.
Under Kerrville, right. Janine's murder trial opened at Georgetown, Texas on January 15, 1984. In February of 1984, jurors deliberated for 3 hours before finding Janine Jones guilty and sentenced her to 99 years.
Good. I would have chosen death, but...
Jones?
And I'm not really one for the death penalty, but okay, sorry.
That's okay. So going back to the first grand jury, Janine Jones was also indicted in San Antonio on charges of injuring 4-week-old Rolando Santos by deliberately injecting him with heparin, an anticoagulant that I talked about earlier. He's the baby up there that made it, but almost didn't, in January 1982. Rolando had been undergoing treatment for pneumonia when he suffered a spontaneous hemorrhaging, but physicians managed to save his life. In October 1984, she was convicted of injuring Rolando and given 60 years. Now, during this trial, an expert was called to testify about a report that he had put together. And in the report, it stated that children were 25% more likely to enter cardiac arrest and 10% more likely to die if Janine Jones was their nurse.
Wow. That,
1 in 4? That's crazy. That's not, you're going to get really upset now because I literally wrote these words. In what can only be described as a real D-bag move, after she lost the 1984 trial, hospital officials throughout Texas, where she had worked or had anything to do with, shredded all the records of her employment and activities, which was, you ready? And I was like, that cannot be right. So I had to double check it somewhere else. 9,000 pounds of records. And the whole reason they did this was to prevent further trials and or embarrassment.
And or the hospitals and staff being sued off their asses. That's all it was. It was a money-saving
I said trials, but move. Yeah.
No, they wanted to cover their asses. That's all it was. Ugh.
Isn't that terrible? Honestly, that's probably why
that's infuriating.
She didn't get,
that is,
didn't get more charges because they got rid of stuff. So
and she's in Texas. They love, they have the death penalty down there. I mean, she killed babies.
She killed babies. Oh, I have one last little note here, and it's a doozy. This is a humdinger. So in a bizarre story I read from an article written by Catherine Ramsland comes this little ditty. Okay, and Catherine...
Can I just tell you this? Uh-huh. Everything that I have done for the 12 days of Christmas, her name has come up.
You know what? That's funny because I... Right? And I was like, I was watching a TV show, I think it was yesterday. And she was on it. Yeah, I was like, oh my God.
She's everywhere. Yeah, yeah. She's the true crime goddess.
So here we go.
I thought we were, but no, it's Catherine.
No, it is. So this is very strange. And she actually wrote this little thing and it's just very weird. So this is her wording. Okay. Verbatim, pretty much, I think. And she is talking about Chelsea's mom. Okay. This is Chelsea's mom. So as Chelsea's mom approached the grave, she saw the nurse from the clinic, Janine Jones. Oddly, Janine was kneeling at the foot of Chelsea's grave, sobbing and wailing the child's name over and over. She rocked back and forth, apparently in deep anguish, as if Chelsea had been her own daughter. What are you doing here? Did the nurse feel guilty about a role in the death? Perhaps she had neglected to do something that made the crucial difference. Right? Like, you're thinking that.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts
guilt.
There? Confronted... Jones returned a blank stare, as if in a trance, and walked away without a word. When she was gone, she noticed something else. While Jones had left a small token of flowers, she had taken a bow from Chelsea's grave. Which...
Souvenir.
Makes you... Exactly. When I read that, that just gave me the creeps. Janine Jones, who is now 70 years old, is serving her sentence at the Murray facility in Gatesville, Texas, and will be eligible for parole 12/3/2037. So hopefully she won't make it that long.
She's not going to see that. Okay, first of all, did they not give her the death penalty because she's a woman?
I don't know, Jen. I guess maybe, I don't know.
If I was on that jury, I would have been screaming. I would probably been kicked out because I'd be screaming, fry
her. I mean,
her.
It is, though, you have to think, there is no hard proof that she did it. They didn't catch her in the act.
That's
she
true.
Was never caught in the act. And, you know, there could have been somebody else that worked alongside of her at all these different places she worked with all these different babies getting sick. I mean,
some people that are convicted with circumstantial evidence that are on death row, that's okay. But she has this kind of circumstantial evidence that is pretty damn strong, and she just gets pretty much, you know, life.
Yep. She's a.
Did they ever find her, like, psychologically impaired?
No, she claims she didn't do it. You know, Munchausen syndrome and Munchausen by proxy is where you. An expert claimed that she had hero complex, sort of like God complex, as a doctor's habit. She loved to be in on the action. She loved to be, like, there was this one story I read where the baby went into cardiac arrest and she went in there and she, like, cleared the room, like, I got this, I got, you know, and brought the baby back to life. And everybody's, like, sweating. They're like, oh, my God. Oh, my, oh, thank you. Thank you, God, whatever. And she turns around, starts whistling and walking away like it was she got off on that. Like, she was high for doing that, achieving that, I saved this baby, I did it. But what they didn't know at that point is that she was causing it.
She's causing it.
To save them. You know, that's the other thing I wonder is how many did she, maybe she really didn't mean to kill all of them, right? Because she did, her glory was being able to be the one that saves them. Like, oh, she's such a great nurse. All these babies.
But she still meant to cause harm.
Oh, yeah. Well, all these babies are having seizures and look at her, save them. She's always able to save them. Well. Probably because she knows exactly what is happening to them.
It's easy to solve the problem when you know what the problem is.
Another little tidbit about this, that all of these victims, and this is telling, were all nonverbal. They weren't talking yet. Mm-hmm. So that was easy for her because, you know, you can't. Why did you shoot me with the needle? I don't, you know, the nurse.
But they can't tell their mother that anything is wrong. Or, you know, Nurse Janine came in last night and. Mm-hmm. Yep. Did this and it really hurt.
Yep.
Yeah. No.
So there is a book out on her. I think there's lots of books. So you can check it out if you want some more information. But it was, I don't know, just that, like, what drives those kind of people? And this is where we come back to the pencil thing. So she loved being a pediatric nurse. She loved caring for these babies. But yet she gave her own babies away. And I think that's telling too, right? She always volunteered to work shifts. Of course, right? She wanted to be there. She was the one that would work all the time. She wanted to be with the sickest patients. I mean, if you put it all together, I'm not a doctor, but I know something's not right, right? There's one nurse that always wants to be with the sickest babies. Why would you want that? Unless, I don't know, unless you really were caring for them and saving them, but she's not.
And I'm sure most are, but she's a scumbag. I mean... Uh-huh. I say that about almost everybody here, but she's kind of like on the list of
the worst of the worst.
Evil.
Yeah.
She's pretty.
And I mean,
high
could you imagine taking your baby, your 14-month-old baby in for a vaccine and then they die? Like, what?
Well, first of all, I can't think of giving up my children just cause.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'm sure she had her circumstances, which she felt she needed to do. And if you are under a circumstance that you have to give up your children, that's one thing. But to just walk away from them is another that.
But honestly, maybe it's a blessing, or else they would be gone too. You know?
But you think she would hurt her?
I don't know.
Probably.
She didn't care about anybody else's children. I mean, obviously.
Well, I don't care about anybody else's children.
You never hurt them, though.
No, but I would never hurt them ever. No. I do care about people's children. I was just trying to be funny.
I know.
It wasn't. But anyway, no, I'm still amazed that she didn't. I guess the jury didn't have enough.
Well, there's
evidence for them to give her death. Or maybe it wasn't even, maybe the prosecutor didn't even put it on the table for death.
Well,
maybe he just wanted to get her into prison.
And you know, the thing, I guess, too, is you got to think about if the baby died during an autopsy, because it, I mean, once they're gone, you don't see needle marks, you know? Like, sometimes that's how people, there was, and I think it very well may have been this drug. It was a young couple that were married. And he took her out for horseback riding and she fell and hit her head and died. And the family was like, she's an excellent horseman. Like, what? I don't understand. Well, the doctor who was doing the autopsy noticed that she had two little needle marks. I think it was like in her neck. And so that's how they got that guy. But it was a long time. Like, he cleared out all their insurance. I mean, yeah.
Which, another thing, shame on all those hospitals, too. Now, I get that with all the lawsuits and everything, it would totally bankrupt them. Mm-hmm. But
on this, I'm glad you brought that up, Jen, because this brings me to my other story I was going to tell you about.
Look at this. I'm just all sorts of segueing for you.
So if you haven't listened to, is it Dr. John? Did you listen to that podcast?
Yes. It's a good.
Right there.
It's a great podcast.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. Like he, you know, because hospitals don't want to deal with that. We have a guy that is a drug addict that is performing neck and back surgery, and he is high as a freaking kite, and he's paralyzing and killing people. Are you going to say, yep, he's ours, he's our employee, or as a business, are you going to go, listen, you get the F out of here, we won't sue you, and you just stop and go away? Well, what are you going to do?
No, I get that.
I mean, I know what you should do, but that's not what they did, hence why he got to keep doing that, too. And same thing for her, because if that first hospital would have brought her up and been like, listen, we have to take your license away, you will never step foot in another hospital ever. But they didn't do that. They did not do that. And they had a doctor and a nurse both step forward and say, she is doing this. And yet they did not do it.
No. So, because they didn't want the trouble of it all. Which, all that did was lead to more deaths.
Sure did.
And hurt children.
Yep.
Just because somebody didn't want to do the paperwork.
Well, they didn't want to get sued.
Most likely.
47 families sued you for the death of an infant or a child, you would be gone. You couldn't survive that as a business. Because you got to remember, hospitals are, they are a business. They make a lot of money.
Well, here in the United States anyway.
Yes, correct. So that is the story of evil nurse awful.
Evil.
Janine Jones.
She's worse than Nurse Cratchit.
She is. For the sure. All right.
Yeah.
That's it, I
guess.
Well,
I don't wish her well.
Nope.
She's not on my Christmas card list this year.
Nope. Thank goodness. All right. So until we got one more day left. It's you, Jim. Just one more.
One more day. I want to remind everybody, if you need that last minute gift for someone, you could go to crimeconuk.com and get them an experience that they will love, especially if they love true crime. And it's still until the first of the year, they have their early bird discount still going on. And if you use code OTCP, you get an extra discount on top of that. So bam, people, there you go. Perfect gift for your true crime lover. And the best part, they get to go meet us because we're going to be there.
That's the worst part for them, but they still get to meet us. So that's okay.
But there's other really cool.
No, this one's saying I would go for all the
cool
other people.
Podcasters.
I would go for the other people, but.
Well, not only podcasts. Haven't even seen all the other speakers and everybody that are going to be there. I just know of all the really cool podcasters that are going to be there.
Yep. I'm very excited.
Besides us.
Very, very excited.
So seriously, that's a great gift. Your true crime loving person will absolutely love you for it. It's so much fun. That's actually how Camille and I got into podcasting, is by going to the true crime conventions here.
It is. Yep.
So that was just my own little commercial there.
I totally
just wanted to throw that in there.
Be super fun. See you in June 2021.
Yep.
But until then, Jen, remember, lock your doors.
Keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love you.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Vane. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
I'm like, let me say it here. I got it. Succinylcholine. Succinylcholine. There we go. Let me say that sentence again. One of the doctors. You should have. One of the doctors. I phonetically spelled it too. succinylcholine. I'm going to get that dry. Succinylcholine.
Just rolls off the tongue.
Because the drug, there we go.
Well, kind of sounds like succinylcholine.
Yeah, well.
The way you say it.
I'm all in Guesslabetal, yeah. Okay. There, scientists were using a new groundbreaking method at the time called gas chromatography. I'm going to get my medical degree after this episode. Let me tell you what.
First there were the Japanese names, and now there's the medical problems.
That's right, buddy.
Names.